Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome, everybody, to the Michael Steele Podcast. Hey, I'm Michael Steele. It's such a great pleasure to be back with you in the house. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcast on. You know how that goes. You know the drill. Certainly follow me on Twitter, at Michael Steele, anytime, day or night, although I'm not there anytime, day or night, but you can try. Look, we've got a great conversation in store today because I've got a buddy I've known for a while who's been successful in public service to the great state of South Carolina and now for the nation. He is twice represented the first district of South Carolina in the United States Congress, has served as the 115th governor of South Carolina, where my family hails from, and now is a candidate for the presidency of the United States in the Republican primary. Imagine that. Welcome, Governor Mark Sanford. Great to have you on the program, man.
Well, pleasure to be with you, and it's good to hear your voice.
It's good to hear yours. Well, let's just jump right into this thing. Before we get into the crazy of the week, let's talk about your effort and where things are right now. Reason.com had a piece out a couple of days ago about your moving into the Republican primary. And it was centered around the interview you did on The Daily Show. And I thought that was an important interview, and I think Reason did as well for this reason. You noted in the interview, quote, "Whether I'm successful or not, I think we need to have a conversation about where we're going as Republicans and where we're going as a country." That has been for you going back now a number of years, certainly in the Trump administration while you were in Congress, a very important value set for you. We as a country have to understand where we are and where we're going. And there are issues that Republicans have talked about in that space, whether it's the economy and jobs, certainly family and our national security, that they've seemed to have abandoned to carry the water of Trump. How are you positioning your campaign against the president who's in a formidable position by virtue of just being the incumbent president to take this fight to him, certainly along economic lines, which I've said publicly and privately is sort of the thing to watch with you, because you can score points, I think, in this area?
Well, time will tell, and we'll see what voters think is interesting or not so interesting. But what I know is that math matters, and it goes well beyond the mood of a country in a given moment or what polling will tell you. And our math doesn't add up in Washington, D.C. And I think at a gut level, people understand that, though debt and deficit and government spending isn't in vogue these days. And so it's not being talked about on the Democratic side of the debate, and it's not being talked about on the Republican side of this presidential debate. But it needs to be, because it's telling to me that Admiral Mike Mullen, who's a military guy, former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, when asked, "What's the biggest threat to the American civilization, to our way of life?" he answers, "Not the Chinese, not the Russians, not the Taliban, but the American debt." And mm-hmm. and we have a profound economic earthquake or hurricane coming our way, and we're not even talking about it. And so, yeah, the purpose of my campaign is to say, we get a shot once every 4 years to talk about issues that impact our lives, and we're kidding ourselves if we leave this off of the equation. And I think, I guess more to the point, I think the president is, in fact, leading us in the wrong direction on this front. He's called himself the king of debt, and he sort of talked a good game when he ran. He said, if you elect me, I'll eliminate the debt over the 8 years that I might be in office. And instead, what he's done is he's jacked the numbers up. I mean, this last debt deal that they just signed increased spending by $1/3 trillion, adds another $2 trillion in new debt. And his own budgets, not Democratic budgets, but his own budgets propose increasing the debt by $9 trillion over the next 10 years. And so I just think that, yeah, we got to talk about some stuff as Americans, because the first part of, I guess, dealing with the problem is recognizing that, you, in fact, have one. And right now in the presidential debate, nobody seems to be recognizing that we got a real problem on this front.
Well, how do you get them to do that? I mean, Mark, you've watched members of our party just, I mean, wholesale abandoned economic principles that, you know, about how free markets work. Free markets. I mean, we're now, you know, the capital of tariffs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
How do you?
And a tariff is a tax.
It's a tax.
I mean, Republicans used to be against raising taxes, and we'll take great credit for a tax cut, but then we won't mention the fact, oh, but by the way, we're reaching your other pocket over here.
Right.
We're raising taxes. I mean, there was a great article in the Wall Street Journal not so many weeks ago talking about how concurrently the price of both washing machines and dryers had gone up by about $89. And it's all because of tariffs, and it protects a couple of jobs, in fairness, but at what cost?
Right.
And we're not, again, having a conversation, to your point, on simple bedrock themes that the Republican Party used to stand for.
But are people going to listen? I mean, look, we're sucked up into a reality TV, I love this French word, milieu, but, you know, we're in this space.
Yeah.
Where everybody's head is literally up their ass when it comes to Trump. It is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. And a lot of the stuff that we, you as a governor, me as a lieutenant governor, you as a congressman, me as a national chairman, laid out that helped us win races, you know, after the debacles of 06 and 08. Turn the party around, get its footing right. In a number of areas, these folks are standing there going, well, none of that seems to matter anymore because Donald Trump is president and he's a champion for me. I'm like, dude, stop smoking the crack pipe, get your head out of the clouds and pay attention to all the numbers you just laid out about what's going to happen to future generations.
And so what I'd say is it, I get the notion of people being sick of normal day politics, and that was warranted. I mean, I completely agree with that. And so people wanted a shock therapy, if you will, to the system. They're like, well, we've tried these other approaches, and they haven't worked so well. Let's try something different. I mean, I get that. I totally get that. But what we have to be careful about is, in that process, do we throw the baby out with the bathwater, and do we destroy some of the simple themes that the Republican Party has historically stood for? And what I would say is the evidence right there seems to be not so good. I mean, if you look at the midterm congressional election, for instance, you look at the congressional district that I used to represent, it went Democratic for the first time in 50 years. And that happened in many other suburban districts across this country, wherein soccer moms, working moms, young millennials turned away in droves. And they said, whatever's going on here, just on tone alone, is inconsistent with what I've been trying to teach my kids, or what though I don't always love mom and dad, with what mom and dad have been trying to teach me.
Right.
And so I think that I get the original sentiment, but we better watch out and not fall into this trap of a cult of personality and go back to simple things that made the party great. I mean, we have a remarkable legacy as a Republican Party with Reagan and Eisenhower and Lincoln and Teddy Roosevelt. I mean, go down the list, but we're deviating from that based on our frustration with government, but ultimately the promises that Trump made, which are good promises, are ones that he has not been trying to deliver on, and therefore we ought to call him on it and say, wait a minute, let's nudge back over here to reality world, not reality TV, but reality world, so that I get issues that are, you know, hampering my life or hampering my kids' life,
right,
or, you know, affecting my ability to achieve the American dream. I get those things dealt with, because in this vortex of back and forth in D.C. right now, we're not getting a lot of problems solved that very much do impact our lives. And we're continuing this process of stacking up the credit card debt that creates this illusion of a prosperous economy when, in fact, if you look at its foundations, it's incredibly weak.
So Will Ritter, who is a noted GOP ads man, made the point in the Reason.com interview story about the launch of your campaign and talking about the economic question. He said, quote, "We wish economic policy got the pitchforks out, but it doesn't." And you acknowledged that. You said you went on to say that you believed your campaign would uncover whether or not fiscal values remain important to Republican voters. And I think that's, for me, what one of the many tests that your campaign puts in play. How has the response been since your announcement you've
been
gone
good.
Out on the streets?
It's been good. Yeah, I mean, when you talk to people and you have more than 30 seconds to explain where you're coming from, there's real receptivity mm-hmm. and amazing conversation where people are like, you know, I am uneasy about this. I'm uneasy about that. Where are we going on looking inward versus outward? Where are we going on spending? You know, where are we going on, you know, a conservative political culture and hanging on to some of the institutions that have, in essence, held the balance of power that's so important to conservatives in place? I mean, where are we going on tone in politics?
Right.
And so I think that when you have longer conversations, they're surprisingly good. And again, every campaign, every candidacy has a value proposition. And I would argue that the value proposition that exists with Trump has been, I'm a dislocator. Okay, got that one down.
Mm-hmm.
And I will challenge the status quo. Okay, got that. But to what end? And this is where people have said, okay, I'm getting those two things, and I'll put up with some of the craziness because, you know, I perceive that what he's doing will help the economy and has helped the economy. And so my 401k is doing okay. My retirement plan is doing okay.
Right.
I got a job. The moment this economy turns down, that value proposition goes out the window. And I think that there'll be a heavy, heavy reexamination of his candidacy. And what we don't want to do as Republicans and as conservatives is wait for that moment. If we do, I would argue that President Trump will end up the modern day Herbert Hoover of modern times. And we all know what followed Herbert Hoover. It was three terms of Roosevelt and a lot of progressive policy that went very much against the common sense conservative solutions that you and I believe in.
Right.
And so either you get ahead of this financial hurricane that's coming our way and you begin to talk about it and deal with it, or you wait for financial markets to handle it for you, in which case it'll be bloody for every one of us. And I want people to think about how fast this untalked about problem is coming our way. We will spend more on interest payments than we do. This is for a social progressive from the left than we will on all programs on behalf of children in just 1 year. In 12 months, in 36 months, in just 3 years, we will spend more on interest than we do on the entirety of our national defense budget. Interest is the fastest growing cost in our categories of federal government. And it just a 1 point rise in interest rates means we will spend more on that 1 point rise in interest rates at the federal level mm-hmm. than we will on all uniformed military personnel in the United States. That's 2 million folks. I mean, we begin to work ourselves into a mass trap if we don't, again, get ahead of this thing. That'll have not only implications in terms of federal programs, but implications in our ability to hold on to a job, to hold on to savings, and to ultimately the American way of life and the American dream.
It's such bottom line common sense. It's I have to tell you, it's refreshing to hear that those words coming out of a Republican's mouth. as I watch, you know, as a lot of Americans watch, the doubling down on debt, the doubling down on deficits, the erratic, uncontrolled. Knee-jerk responses to global changes and just so much that folks have to take in. How would you, Mark, talk to people? What's your message to people, aside from the economic stuff when we got that? There's a storyline with you. There's a personal storyline with you. Everybody knows the drama during mm-hmm. your time as governor, all right? And you have been, I think, more forthright and bold-faced about that than many political leaders have been or would be even after the fact. And so there's a lot to take into account. How would you, what's your opening line, your 30-second elevator pitch ride to the American people about why, specifically Republicans, because you got to get the Republican primary, you don't lose sight of that, that, yeah, you're the guy they should look at too as they consider the next steps for the party and for the country?
I would just say, do you believe that we can stay on our current course?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do we need to challenge the status quo on debt and spending? This president isn't. He's doubled down on that front. Do you believe that we ought to have a conversation on where we go on trade and tariffs? I mean, if you believe in market principles, certainly we want to get tough on some of what China's done. But do we really want to put in place punitive tariffs for Canada? I mean, are they really under the guise of national security? I mean, might we not have a conversation on that front? Do we want to have a conversation about where we're going on institutions? I mean, the founding fathers were so deliberate in setting up a nation of laws and not men. And they wanted an institutional framework of a government that, in essence, were shock absorbers to the passions of men. We could go up, we could go down. No, they want something a little bit more stable than that. And so they put in place institutions as they divided power. So when the president goes out and says, Jerome Powell, the chairman of the Fed, is an enemy, in essence, an enemy of the state, is that really the language we want out of a president? I mean, are we not doing damage to people's trust in different institutions that have served us well? Again, I'm not a particular fan of the Fed, if you actually look at it. But might we not have a conversation on where we're going on something?
Right.
We don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater institutions. Where are we going with regard to tone? I mean, at the end of the day, the presidency is a remarkable leadership post at many different levels. And we take our cues from that. I was at a town hall meeting, and one guy was just chewing my ear off. And finally, I go up to him and I said, look, I don't know you, but I know you by reputation. And whatever just went on is not consistent with the you that I've heard about. What's up with this? And he turns to me and says, here's the deal. If the president of the United States can say anything to anybody at any time on any subject, why can't I?
Mm-hmm.
And so what we want to be careful about is, as Republicans, you know, are how are we viewed as conservatives? You know, I think we have remarkably on point prescriptions and remedies for a lot of what ails us as a country and as a society. But are people turning us off just based on tone? So, yeah, I think that there are a lot of conversations to be had that would, I think, lead one to say, well, let me explore more at marksanford.com. Let me learn a little bit more about where he's coming from. And you'd get probably more than you want to see on campaign.
And that's what campaigns are for. No,
yeah.
I definitely appreciate that. And I want to key off of that individual that you had the conversation with that you pulled up, who said, I can say anything at any time to anyone about anything at any time, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Because that reflects a corrosive attitude that is repeated by the president over and over and over again. The Democrats have launched an impeachment inquiry an investigation into his connections, ties, and the ask of Ukrainian President Zelensky. And the president, in what was one of the more unhinged moments this week, of which there were many, had this exchange with Jeff Mason doing a White House briefing. Let's take a quick listen.
President Biden and his son, Hunter.
Are you talking to me?
Yeah, it was just a follow-up of what I just asked you, sir.
Listen, you ready? We have the president of Finland. Ask him a question.
I have one for him. I just wanted to follow up on the one that I asked you, which was,
did you hear me?
What did you want?
Did you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Ask him a question.
I will, but
I've given you a long answer. Ask this gentleman a question. Don't be rude.
No, sir, I don't want to be rude. I just wanted you to have a chance to answer the question that I asked
you. I've answered everything. It's a whole hoax. And you know who's playing into the hoax? People like you and the fake news media that we have in this country. And I say, in many cases, the corrupt media, because you're corrupt. Much of the media in this country is not just fake, it's corrupt. And you have some very fine people, too. great journalists, great reporters, but it, to a large extent, it's corrupt and it's fake. Ask the president of Finland a question.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is the current president of the United States in an exchange with a White House reporter when that reporter asked him, so what did you expect from Mr. Zelensky? What was the reason for your question to him, the point of your favor? Would you do me a favor, essentially? And the president lost it. How do we deal with this behavior? How should the American people contextualize this as they look at a presidential primary between you and the other gentlemen that are also running, but especially with the president, and going forward, as we look at the president calling members of the press fake news, etc. Oh, by the way, people, he is the biggest arbiter of fake news. That's the irony here. He puts out more fake news than any news service reports in any given day of the week. And yet he's allowed to get away with that bullshit. And it just drives me absolutely crazy when I hear people sit back like the individual that you had the exchange with and justify that kind of behavior.
Yeah, what I'd say is we ought to be careful. We're playing with incredibly dangerous stuff right now. You know, civilizations basically devolve and break down with one of three causes, financially, which is the primary one, which is why I'm talking about finances to the extent that I am. That's the thing that typically kills off a civilization. The other things that if you look at, you know, the going from the Roman Republic to the Roman Empire, the other thing that kills off is a breakdown of the institutions that have held a civilization together. We got to be careful there. And frankly, the other one's tone. Everybody stops listening to each other, digs into their own hole and says, I'm right. Those three things will kill a civilization. And so, again, are some stories with the media inaccurate? Absolutely. And should we call them on it every time? Yes. But when you go out and label the media an enemy of state, which the president has said,
right,
and you call it fake news, again, we're doing real harm to institutions that are vital. And it's telling the founding fathers put up as number one. I mean, the first right out there was his no-see speech and free press. And so in Russia, they actually have real fake news. I mean, it really is fake.
Right.
They just make stuff up based on state programming. And so are there biases? Certainly. Have I gotten my share of bad stories over the years? Yes. But if you're a conservative, you absolutely believe in the power of the media as a check and a balance on government power and individuals in government. And it's very, very important that we, again, keep that in place. The moment we discard that, that is the moment we lose one of the big legs that has held our civilization in place.
So the Dems have launched this inquiry based on the initial conversation between the president and president of Ukraine, Zelensky, in which the president basically said, hey, you know, I have a favor, though. You know, it's kind of started with that. They put out a document that really corroborates the allegations that were made by the whistleblower in that individual's complaint. And yet you have a lot of Republicans out here doing one of two things, either standing pat, silent, not saying anything. What, me? I don't know. Is it raining outside? Is there a storm? I have no idea. And then you have others who are headlong, like a Rudy Giuliani, for example, going in there and laying down tracks. But at the same time, and here's the kicker, throwing Mike Pompeo under the bus. Pompeo now getting caught in his own lie, technically, when asked, okay, what happened on the phone call, feigning that I have no idea, I wasn't on the phone call, then has to come out after proof has been shown that he was, in fact, on the phone call along with 11 or so other people. How does this narrative, in your thinking right now, as a presidential candidate watching this unfold, the Democrats sort of running this process, is the president creating more evidence against himself by the way he's responding? Like just the, you know, saying, hey, China should investigate Joe Biden too. hello, that's what you're being charged with doing with Ukraine, you know, getting the government involved in a presidential election. But then the other side, Mark, is how badly can the Democrats screw this up? You know,
quite badly.
Yeah.
And I think to that point, David Brooks wrote an eloquent column last week talking about while impeachment might be warranted, that it was of great danger to both Republicans and Democrats because of the way it will suck all the air out of the room in terms of other discussion and debate. And, you know, again, we get the shot once every 4 years to have a national debate on where we're going as a country and where we're going as parties. And you know, it would make obviously any other news somewhat, I wouldn't say irrelevant, but certainly would be usurped by what's happening next on impeachment. As to what I believe, I mean, it doesn't smell right.
Right.
And we ought to call it as such. I mean, the idea of a president of the United States saying to his attorney general, why don't you help out this foreign power in investigating a political foe of mine? I mean, that just can't pass the smell test anywhere. I mean, it's like back when I was governor, if I went to, you know, one of the many companies we negotiate with that, you know, were foreigners, and we said, well, let's go to their ambassador, and I want them to help me with my attorney general at the state level to investigate a political foe. People go nuts. And in fact, we all would have gone nuts as Republicans if Obama had been doing the same thing.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I just think we've got to have an equal measure of outrage if we're going to express outrage. And so people, I get it, they circle the wagons, they protect you know, the person at the masthead of their party. But this is with grave danger, because going back to trust, which is the ultimate ingredient in any open political system, you begin to at some point sound awfully hollow. So I think it's of great danger for the Republicans. And I think the danger for the Democrats is it plays into Trump's hands, and it becomes a personality contest of him versus Jerry Nadler versus Nancy Pelosi. And you know, that doesn't accrue ultimately to Democrats' benefit. If you could keep it on the issues, it's one thing, but that's not how these things go.
No, it doesn't. And I guess the follow-up would be, so how do you see, what's your opinion on the basic charges against the president that have been set forth so far, that, you know, his actions and words seemingly indicate that he not only is inviting, but trying to facilitate through his attorney general, through his personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, interference by foreign government in the upcoming presidential election?
Yeah, again, what I've said is it doesn't pass the smell test for me. I think it ought to be investigated. I don't want to prejudge the process. I mean, some people have jumped to conclusions, said he needs to be out, he needs to be impeached.
Right.
No, let the process work, and let's, you know, hear the context of what was said and why it was said. Let's hear different folks that were a part of this. That, I think, has value. I think we should all reserve judgment. We believe in a judicial system that's predicated on innocence until proven guilty. Let's see where the facts lead.
All right. So you raised a very interesting point with the idea of let the process play itself out. That is not necessarily what the Republican Party is doing with the Republican primary. In fact, a number of states, including your own, have decided to forego a primary in the upcoming presidential election. They claim that the idea is to prevent discord at the convention. His political advisors, the president's advisors, have concluded that a month-long effort to tighten the rules for choosing delegates, folks, to the Republican National Convention, you know, it's the appropriate thing to do. But the effect, Mark, is to not only not allow for the organic flow of the convention to take place, to let the process unfold the way it naturally would, but to make certain that there are no dissenting speeches at the party convention, that there is no other focus going into that convention. What say you, sir, about this process, which I think is abhorrent? I think it's undemocratic. And it is beneath Republicans that they are so afraid of their own process, their own rules, their own system, that they would go to this extent to protect Donald Trump from a legitimate challenge for the nomination.
I just simply say ditto, and I cannot agree more. I mean, this whole thing is bizarre. It goes back to our deviation from the founding fathers' intent of us being a nation of laws and process and not men. And the idea of, I mean, I get it, the president might want to have a coronation. In other countries, they got coup d'etats. But in our country, we have open and free elections. And we and the idea of some subordinate candidate, somebody like me, walking in with a couple of delegates because you won, let's say, in a couple of places, and be able to at least hoist the flag of saying, wait a minute, I think we're spending too much money and we ought to have a conversation about it as Republicans, is healthy for the process.
Right.
I went to the University of Virginia for graduate school, and we did the case study there. We'd throw an idea out in the middle of the table, you'd debate it for 90 minutes, and we actually ended up with better ideas at the end of the 90 minutes than when we started. And that's what our entire system is predicated on. Elections are about fostering and creating debate so that we sit down as Americans around the proverbial kitchen table and we say, I believe this, and nobody goes home. You believe that, and let's sit here and we'll either agree to disagree or we'll come up with a compromise and a solution going forward. And much of what is being done in this presidential cycle on the Republican side has been designed to thwart that, either at the convention level, which is the opposite of what you would have done when you were chair.
Absolutely.
Or even at the state level, wherein they've killed off elections, as they did, for instance, in my home state of South Carolina.
It is an amazing turn for the party, and it in some cases encapsulates this idea of the party of Trump. I still do not firmly believe in that because there's someone like you that says, wait a minute, let's take a time out and talk about this. And I love the fact that you are. I want to see you do it more because I think it's important and healthy for the party, and I think it's important and healthy for the country. Folks, he was a member of Congress. He was the governor of South Carolina, and now he is a candidate for the Republican nomination for the presidency. Mark Sanford, it's a real treat having you on, and I look forward to having you back throughout the rest of this campaign, my friend.
Well, Michael, I really appreciate it, and I just ask listeners to go to marksanford.com if they'd like to learn more. I sure appreciate them choosing to learn more.
Absolutely. Folks, check it out. As I've been saying in the Twitterverse of recent times, educate yourself, inform yourself. Don't just take the hype because it makes you feel good. Feel good because it comes from a place of knowledge. We'll have more next time, folks, here on the Michael Steele Podcast. So glad you could be with us. Don't forget to download this episode, Apple Podcasts and Stitcher, wherever you get your podcast on. Follow me on Twitter at Michael Steele and check out again MarkSanford.com and all that's going on in his presidential campaign. Later, folks.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.